Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to Thursday's edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim, we keep talking about the people who won't run for president, and that list seems to be getting longer by the day. But we're also getting an ever longer list of people who won't run for re-election to the U.S. Senate. And fortunately for us, the list contains a whole lot more Democrats than Republicans, although part of that is due to the fact that more than double the number of Democrats are up than Republicans this year. But the latest on the list is a longtime Hawaii congressman, then Senator Daniel Akaka. He's 86 years old. Not a huge surprise that he's not running for re-election. It's a deep blue state, but one of the Republicans very much rumored to be running is two-term Republican Governor Linda Lingle. She just left office at the beginning of the year. As far as I know, she's still extremely popular, and certainly in terms of viable Republicans, she's not only on the short list, she is the list. So as far as I know, after two terms, she's still very popular, and lo and behold, Republicans might have a shot at actually winning a Senate seat in Hawaii.
Yeah, there was a poll in October of last year which put her approval at 44%, disapproval at 40%, which is not extremely popular anymore, but you may expect a certain amount of incumbent fatigue when you're well into your eighth year of being governor. And when you said about how, you know, what the number of Democrats, there are two ways you can look at it. You can look at the entire Democratic Senate caucus, and by that standard, they believe that 9.4% of them have announced they're retiring. And if you just look at the ones who are up this year, it's 21.7%. So one in five Democrats chose not to run for re-election. And the cycle is young, Greg, so we may see more of them. So, yeah, I mean, this takes what probably would be a near-guaranteed incumbent re-election in Hawaii and gives the Republicans a chance at winning this. Not a great chance. But because obviously, look, it'll be a presidential year. Hawaii was the best state for Obama last time around. His approval rating is still very high there, so you figure the Democrats will be coming out. But as you mentioned, Linda Lingle was pretty darn popular throughout her reign. In fact, I think it's safe to say more successful in connecting with voters and margins of victory and all these categories than any other Republican in the state of Hawaii, certainly today and perhaps in their history,
sure.
Certainly in their recent history. So I'm talking to some folks. They don't expect any immediate announcement from her. If she does jump in, the expectation this will be effectively clear the field, whereas the Democrats will probably be having an all-out war for this Senate nomination, because between the two senators, you really don't get too many openings with two longtime incumbents there. And you end up with a circumstance in which they'll be fighting all the way up to September of 2012. So a decent opportunity for a Republican pickup there.
Jim, it's interesting you mentioned that these opportunities don't pop up in Hawaii very often. If anyone asks you how long Daniel Inouye has represented Hawaii in the House or Senate, the answer is yes. He's been there the entire length of the state's history. So, yeah, it's a little bit rare to have an open seat there, although this is the other seat, which I guess has come open a few times in the 50-plus years of Hawaii. On to topic number two now, and the martinis don't get much worse than this. Obviously, we're talking about the situation in Frankfurt, Germany. Two U.S. Air Force personnel killed, two others injured by a deranged gunman. We now know that he's from Kosovo, that he hollered out Allahu Akbar and everything else that we see every time these massacres take place, whether it's Fort Hood or anywhere else. And obviously, this guy's a radical Muslim, and this is just the latest incident of this happening, and U.S. Military personnel in particular being targeted. And the president came out and denounced this in a brief statement at the White House yesterday. But the key here, I think, is what will happen long term here. He vowed justice. He vowed to get to the bottom of all this. That's what we heard after Fort Hood, too. And while there are charges pending against the guy who perpetrated that, Major Hassan, the efforts of the administration to try and distract us with whatever magic tricks from the fact that this was clearly motivated by radical Islam was pretty disgusting. And the hope is that that won't happen this time, but the track record isn't good.
There was an interesting story in the Wall Street Journal a few weeks ago, looking over all of the government reports and after and reviews of what happened with Fort Hood. And almost all of them, you know, couldn't bring themselves to say the words Islamist or you know, talk about the role of a radical version of Hassan's Muslim faith, you know, driving him to take this terrible violent act. Kind of fascinating to watch yesterday. The Germans came out and said, and we're using the term, you know, radical Muslim fairly early on. And it's one of those things where, like, look, I mean, is it possible the guy was angry about high airfare prices or something? I theoretically, I suppose it could be some other factor that's a trigger, but it's a little tiring to see every conceivable benefit of the doubt extended to these types of circumstances. And even when it looks like there's plenty of evidence pointing towards what the motive is, you still see government officials in this country really, hesitant and tentative and afraid to come out and say these sorts of things. By comparison, you'll see Mike Bloomberg speculating that the Times Square bomber was angry about healthcare.
Exactly.
I mean, we have a protected class of folks in this country who you can't speak honestly about, and that's no way to win a war. The only other note I think about this is it's kind of frustrating and terrifying to realize how obvious a target this has been all along. I mean, we have military forces that transfer through civilian airports. If you are a bad guy overseas, all you have to do is just watch the airports long enough, and sooner or later you'll get a sense of, the places that you tend to see them. Thank God we haven't seen any type of attack on a USO office or anything like that. You should see in the U.S. Airports. Airport security is already enough of a nightmare. I can only imagine what steps this will bring. I think the only thing you can do is try to figure out ways to get the ticking time bombs before they go off, so to speak. And unfortunately, that is easier said than done.
Now, hard to do in this case, since this guy wasn't actually in the military like Hassan was. That seems to be an extremely preventable situation and tragedy that happened down there. So let's hope the lesson has been learned, and let's hope there's not some sort of mealy-mouthed attempt to explain this away or water down what really happened here, because clearly this is the battle and the war we're engaged in, and to try and deny that or obfuscate it is just a complete waste of time and hurts our war effort. On to martini number three now, and back to the economy. This is our good friend Michael Moore, the esteemed economist, who is usually occupying his time by being a major agitator on issues like gun control and socialized healthcare, and telling us how wonderful Castro's healthcare system is. This was an interview Michael Moore did in the last few days, talking about how way too much of the wealth in this country is concentrated in the hands of a few people, and darn it, they're not spending their money how he wants them to.
What's happened is that we've allowed a vast majority of that cash to be concentrated in the hands of just a few people, and they're not circulating that cash. They have no interest in helping you with your life with that money. We've allowed them to take that. That's not theirs. That's a national resource. That's ours. That we all have this. We all benefit from this, or we all suffer as a result of not having it.
So all of that income that we work for, try to provide for our families, that's not for us to determine how to spend, Jim. That's for people like Michael Moore, who I would imagine is among the rich people. And it's good to see the wisdom of the use of his financial funds in trying to bail out Julian Assange. So I guess that's how he wants the rest of us to spend some of ours. But I'm not going to leave it to me, and I'll let you comment in a moment. I want to use the economic wizardry of the Seinfeld program, specifically from the episode where Kramer was working as a mall Santa and had been indoctrinated by Elaine's communist boyfriend, and leave it to a small child to tell him the error of his ways. And I think the same advice applies for Michael Moore.
These capitalist fat cats are inflating the profit margin and reducing your total number of toys.
Hey, this guy's a commie!
Hey, keep it quiet!
Jim, I think that pretty much sums it up.
As you play that, I was trying to picture Michael Moore bursting through a doorway the way Kramer used to, but well, no, Michael Moore just can't generate that kind of velocity. I guess the more intriguing thing about this is that we're hearing from Michael Moore again, because it seemed like, Greg, I don't know about you, I went like nearly a year without hearing from him or really even thinking about Michael Moore. And it was kind of fascinating. He used to be, particularly during the Iraq War, the peak of Iraq War fury, that he was kind of front and center, and he was at the 2004 Republican convention. Michael Moore was one of the defining faces of the left, and he really kind of slid down the scale. And you kind of saw the Keith Olbermans of the world and the Rachel Maddows of the world kind of stepping up and taking a more prominent role. Between the Assange bailout and this, I kind of wonder if Michael Moore has been yearning for some attention, that there's kind of a sense of, hey, look at me. I'm going to advocate effectively stealing, which is what his economic policy comes to, is like, that which you think is yours, it's really mine because I say so. And as long as we just eliminate the entire concept of property rights and the idea of ownership of the fruit of your own labor, as long as you don't have to do that, Everything will be fine in Michael Moore's world. So I'm going to stop over his mansion later and drive his cars and eat some of his food, because you know he's got, you know, Michael Moore. Well, let's make fun of him, and I'm sure the guy's a good eater. And if he won't let me in, I'll just get a camera and we'll just, you know, we'll just follow him around. I'll call it Michael and me.
Jim, amazing way to end today's session. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.